We have been blessed in many ways to study this oh-so-important letter that Paul, by inspiration, wrote to the church at Ephesus. The church at Ephesus was filled with all kinds of people. It was filled with men and women, filled with parents and children, filled with slaves and free, all kinds of people. Paul had introduced the idea of submission in the letter, about how we're to submit to one another. Submit to those who are in authority. Submission was such an important part. He talked about husbands and wives and that relationship and how important it was. He talked about parents and children and how important that relationship was. Now he turns his attention to something in society in the first century that everybody was aware of. And that was the subject of slaves and masters, of slavery. Slavery was very well established in the first century. By the time Paul wrote this letter, some 60 years after the birth of Christ, there were probably, some estimates are, 1.5 million slaves just in Italy. I'm just talking about Italy alone, not some of the other countries. Some of the wealthy Romans owned thousands of slaves. And the owner, or the master, whoever we would call them, had absolute authority over the slaves. They could do whatever they wanted to with the slaves, in the slave's life, if it was their desire. That was slavery in the first century. You know, we tend to think of slavery like it was in the United States back in the 1800s, and slavery was basically was based on race, but not so in the land in the first century. Slaves in the first century could come from all kinds of situations. They weren't based on race like they were in our country. Some people voluntarily became indentured to masters. Some were forced into it. A lot of them, though, were prisoners of war. Prisoners of war that were taken in battles, and they were made slaves. That's where a vast, vast number came from. If Paul would have written a letter that advocated putting a total end to slavery, it would have caused a revolt, a revolution that would have ripped apart society in the sense of countless tens and hundreds of thousands of people dying. So what did Paul do? Well, Paul, by inspiration, urges Christian slaves to work within that society, that culture, that social order, at least for the time being. And, of course, we know that slavery was eventually done away with. But Christians, in whatever situation they find themselves in, are given duties and obligations, and that's the point. So in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul, first of all, turns his attention to Christian slaves. And there are some tremendous lessons, as we'll see at the end, about how this is relevant to us. And indeed, it is relevant. So in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 5, Paul writes, "Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart as to Christ, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as bond servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will, doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free." As we'll see in a minute, he wrote much the same words to the church at Colossae about slaves. First thing he says, slaves, bondservants, you are to be obedient. You are to be faithful in your service. Now, of course, slaves could do all kinds of things in the first century. Slaves became and were, some of them were quite educated because their masters wanted them to come to know certain crafts and trades and have certain abilities. So many of them were educated. So regardless of what kind of slave or bond servant you were to be faithful in your service. So that's what you're supposed to do. You be faithful. And not only were you to be faithful, you were to be faithful with the right attitude, with the right frame of mind, the right spirit. He says, this is the spirit that you're to obey your masters. You're to do so, first of all, with fear and trembling. They were to have respect for their owners. And of course, a lot of slaves in the first century did not. So Christian slaves were to stand out. You know, just like us today, we're to stand out from the general population because of our work, of our faith, of our attitude and spirit. We should stand out as being different than the majority of the world. Well, Christian slaves were to also. If they were obedient to their masters, if they were faithful in their service, if they had this respect for their masters, they would stand out. This would be a way for them to win to Christ other slaves and maybe some of their owners and masters. So they were to stand out. So they were to be submissive in carrying out their duties, their obligations, their work, their responsibilities. Be conscientious in all that they did. In 1 Peter chapter 2, we have some words from Peter, beginning in verse 18. 1 Peter 2, verse 18 and following, Peter writes, "Servants, be submissive to your masters with all fear, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the harsh, for this is commendable, if because of conscience toward God, one endures grief, suffering wrongfully. For what credit is it if, when you are beaten for your faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God." He says, if you're treated badly because of your faults, that's just what you deserve. But if you're treated badly for doing something good, he says, that's commendable. So, Christian slaves, be submissive to all kinds of masters. And of course, we have a tremendous example in the case of Philemon and Onesimus. We have the letter to Philemon. Philemon was a Christian slaveholder in the first century. Onesimus was one of his slaves. We remember what Onesimus did. He ran away from his master. But when he ran away from his master, he ended up coming in contact with Paul, and Paul converted him to Christ. And it's very important what Paul told him, Onesimus, to do. Paul says, you go back to your slave owner. You go back to Philemon. Philemon was your rightful legal owner. But, he says, you're not going to go back just as a slave, though. See, the relationship has changed, at least in part. You'll still be a slave, but you're also going to be a brother in Christ. That's what changed. Paul did not tell Onesimus that he didn't have to serve Philemon anymore. He did tell Onesimus, you go back and you show respect and you serve him. Because that's what you're supposed to do. And if he did so, he would stand out. So Onesimus left as a rebellious slave. But after he was converted to Christ, he came back as a faithful, responsible, submissive slave. Why? Because Christ changed him. It didn't change the fact that he was a slave. It changed how he acted and lived as a slave. That was the difference. So going back to our text with servants and masters, after he says, be obedient with fear and trembling, he says, do it with a sincere heart as you are doing it to Christ. Don't pretend. He says, don't be a hypocritical slave. Do it with integrity. Do it with sincerity. Be real. When you serve your masters, your owners, with the right kind of attitude, don't be pretending to have this attitude. Actually have the attitude. So don't be a hypocrite. Do so with a real, honest, true, sincere heart. He says, don't do it with eye service as men pleasers. He says, don't do that. You know, don't only serve your master when your master's looking. You know, don't be just lazy when your master's not around or when he's not looking. And then when he looks over here, start to work. See, that's eye service as men pleasers. He says, don't do that. Because remember, your master may not see you being unfaithful and irresponsible and lazy, but God will. See, God sees you all the time, whether your owner or master does or not. God sees whether you're doing a good job or not. God sees if you're being faithful or not. God sees if you have the right attitude or not. See, he sees those things, whether your master does or not. He says, remember that you're bondservants of Christ. You're not just a bondservant of your master. More importantly, you're a bondservant of Christ doing the will of God from the heart. So just as they served God from the heart, they were to serve their human masters from the heart because this was God's will. This is how God wants you to act. When Paul wrote to the church at Colossae, I mentioned he told them much of the same things because there were slaves and masters in the church at Colossae as well. Listen to Colossians chapter 3, beginning in verse 22. Colossians 3, verse 22. Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, for you serve the Lord Christ. But he who does wrong will be repaid for what he's done, and there is no partiality. The slaves were to do this heartily. They were to serve their masters with all their heart. So when they looked at their master, their owner, it was as if they were looking at Christ and they were doing it directly for Christ. That's what Paul is telling them. And see, if the slaves would act that way, the owners and the other slaves would note that, would see that they're, you know, serving on an entirely different level than the rest of the world. They would stand out. And that's what God wanted them to do. Stand out in your service. Do it with all your might. Do it heartily. Regardless of what it is you do, do it heartily. So he reminds them in verse 7 that by faithfully serving their masters, they were serving God. He says in verse 7, with goodwill doing service as to the Lord and not to men. Because getting approval from your master is good, but getting it from God is absolutely necessary. As I mentioned this morning in class, hearing well done on the day of judgment is the most important thing. Hearing well done in this life, that's great and wonderful, but that doesn't mean anything compared to hearing it on the day of judgment. Hearing well done then makes all the difference. The sheep and the goats, the sheep did well, the goats did not. And there's the dividing line, plain and simple. So by doing this, they were adorning the doctrine. They were showing to the world what the doctrine of Christ was. In Titus chapter 2, Paul talks about adorning the doctrine. Chapter 2, verse 9. Paul writes, "Exhort bondservants to be obedient to their own masters, to be well-pleasing in all things, not answering back, not pilfering, but showing all good fidelity, faithfulness, that they may adorn the doctrine of God our Savior in all things." See, they would adorn the doctrine by living differently than the other slaves lived. We do the same thing. We adorn the doctrine when we live differently than the world lives. It's different, and we make the doctrine of Christ attractive to other people. We adorn the doctrine. He tells them in verse 8, "Knowing that whatever good anyone does, he will receive the same from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free. Good deeds have their rewards." I mentioned that extra star in your crown. Good deeds have their rewards. And the rewards that matter come on the day of judgment. Those are rewards that matter. In Hebrews chapter 6, the writer tells us in verse 10, "For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward His name, in that you have ministered to the saints and do minister." Some people just quit. But God says, the writer says in Hebrews, that God does not forget your labor of love. If you continue in your labor of love. If you quit, you lose it all. So He says, don't quit. So whether a person is a slave or free won't matter on the day of judgment. God is not going to be concerned about whether you were a slave or free, only whether you faithfully serve the Lord. That's what He's going to be concerned about. If you have, you will hear, "Well done." If you've not been faithful in your service, you will not hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Only one verse is devoted to the masters. Maybe because there weren't too many Christian masters in the church at Ephesus or in the church at Colossae. But He says one thing to the one verse here to the Christian masters, and He says, "And you masters, do the same things to them," talking about the slaves, "giving up threatening, knowing that your own master also is in heaven, and there is no partiality with him." Masters have an obligation, and the obligation is before God to treat their slaves with respect. Treat them like their fellow human beings. Most of the masters and owners in the first century didn't treat them as human beings. They were way down on the list. They were not treated as human beings. Treated more like animals, or even worse. He says, "Remember, every master on earth has a master in heaven." This is what He told the church in Colossae, Colossians chapter 4, verse 1. "Masters, give your bondservants what is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven, a master that is always watching, always looking, because He has that all-seeing eye." He says, "Do this without any partiality." And again, on the day of judgment, God is not going to be concerned with your social status, your economic status, anything like that. He's no respecter of persons. No respecter of persons. In Acts chapter 10, we have that recorded for us. Acts chapter 10, notice verses 34 and 35. We're told this, "Then Peter opened his mouth and said, 'In truth, I perceive that God shows no partiality. But in every nation, whoever fears Him and works righteousness is accepted by Him. That's what's important. On the day of judgment, it's not important how much money you died with, how many possessions you died with, how much land you owned, what kind of job you had. Those things aren't going to matter. Did you fear God and work righteousness? Were you faithful in whatever it is you did? If so, you'll hear, "Well done." What applications are there for us? William Barclay, in his commentary on this, said that a Christian is going to do the best he can. And here's his words. "Every single piece of work the Christian produces must be good enough to show to God." Well, now that's something to think about. Everything you do, do it well enough so that if God was standing in front of you, you would not be anxious to show it to Him. You did it with whatever ability you had, and you could show it to Him. The problem that the world has always faced and that it faces today is basically not economic, but religious. We will never make men good workmen by bettering their conditions or heightening rewards. It's a Christian duty to see to these things, but in themselves, they'll never produce good work. Still less will we produce good work by increasing oversight and multiplying punishments. The secret of good workmanship is to do it for God. Now, if every workman in America had that attitude, and I mean every person that worked, my, what a difference it would make. A Christian worker will always be honest, not stealing anything. Christian worker is going to be dependable. Dependable. An honest day's work for an honest day's pay. A Christian worker accepts responsibility for his actions, and he'll admit it when he makes mistakes. Christian worker will be a good influence. Here's one of the most important things in the workplace. Will be a good influence. A Christian worker will remember that God is his ultimate master and that there is going to be a day of judgment. And that day of judgment is going to be a time of rewards or punishments. And it'll all be based on whether we were faithful in what we did on earth. We all have different talents, abilities, opportunities, resources. And that's, we'll be judged by what we did with those. What we did with them. Did we do it for the glory of God? Or did we do it for any other reason? Because if it was done for any other reason, it's not done for God. How we live on earth while we're alive makes a difference. Because everybody's going to spend eternity somewhere. Somewhere. And that destiny is determined by what we do in life. And that's the heart of it. What have we been doing with our lives? Are we doing it for God, and are we doing our best for God? Or are we giving Him the very, very least? I hope this morning we will pay attention to the words of our invitation song that Dean has chosen. And if there is a need in your heart to respond, I pray and encourage that you will come as we stand and sing this song.